Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Odoo Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:05 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 4th. Well, when we look at the stock markets generally today, they're in positive territory, but what I thought was particularly interesting is the fact that the Fed's balance sheet is continuing to contract. And that's despite the fact that they said that the balance sheet runoff was ended at the end of last month. In fact, I think it was in July. So when we then think about, well, if they've stopped running off the balance sheet, why is it still contracting? There's got to be some reason for that. They're obviously not reinvesting all of the maturing bonds. One of the biggest contentions, or one of the biggest promises they made, was that they were going to try and run off their mortgage portfolio, and that they were going to reinvest all those expiring bonds or maturing bonds, and additionally the ones that were maturing early as a result of prepayments, back into the treasury markets. But perhaps there is an additional consideration, that with the yields so very low and the 10-year is still hovering below 1.5%, that the uptick in refinancing is leading to faster prepayments on mortgages, and that could potentially represent more funds available to the Federal Reserve than there are bonds to buy, or some discrepancy in the two balances. Because one thing we know for certain is that with the further contraction of the balance sheet, that has been one of the factors that has contributed to the dearth of dollars internationally, and also the strength of the US dollar. Well, the US dollar was in negative territory in here today. One of the most notable factors of the trend over the course of the last couple of years has been the failure of breakouts to be sustained, whether on the upside or the downside. It's been a very choppy environment overall. That's probably another way of saying it. Having pushed onto new high ground at the beginning of this week, then it is now unwinding that very short-term overbought condition. What we would clearly need to see is a sustained move below the trend mean in order to confirm that a change of trend has in fact occurred. When we look at it over the longer term, then the upward bias has been picking up pace, particularly over the last few months. I think that is supported by the balance sheet runoff, and also by the fact that you've got negative rates just about everywhere. The Fed funds rate right now is currently around the 2.25% level. So every single point on the US Treasury curve is below that rate. 2.5%, if I can just contract, 2.25% feels like a long way from where yields on any part of the curve are at present. But what's also rather impressive is just how inverted the swaps curve is. And when we look at the very acute decline that is evident between the 3-month and the 18-month, that's almost a full percent, 100 basis points. So that's also significantly below the Fed funds rate, and that's pricing in additional rate cuts, at least another quarter point, potentially even 50 basis points. And as soon as by the end of this year, potentially even this month. Well, additional interest rate cuts should help to eat into the dominance of the US dollar. But of course, I think what we're really seeing is just a short-term overbought condition getting unwound and an oversold condition for the euro getting unwound. It was up 58 ticks in here today. The pound was in more positive territory. It was up over a cent, and that's a pretty impressive rebound now from the 120 area. And 120 was the nadir back in 2016. I do think that there is scope here for a reversion back up towards the mean for the pound. Now the question, however, is even if there is an election, what will be the result of that election? Are we going to get another hung parliament? And the UK is potentially looking at three elections in 4 years. This is positively Italian-esque in terms of the frequency of elections, and it really does give a clear signal just how riven Parliament is on this issue of Brexit. But there is scope here for some additional upside on the pound. I do think that it is the continued drive lower in terms of interest rates and the compression of yields is more responsible for the bounce that we had today on Wall Street. Now, we can see that the S&P 500 is right in the region of the upper side of this range that's persisted for most of the last 6 weeks. If we can get upside follow-through tomorrow, then at least that would help to support the view that this is a consolidation that's on the cusp of being resolved. I do think that this has been a rather orderly consolidation in the region of the trend mean and the upper side of this range that's persisted for the last 18 months. One of the primary consistency characteristics of the trend over the last decade has been that there have occasionally been times when the index has pulled back below the 200-day moving average, but on each of those occasions it found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And that these medium-term corrections have generally lasted about 18 months. And we're moving on a little from the 18-month bracket now, but this is the ninth month and it began at the end of January in 2018. So by the end of this month, it will be almost exactly the 18-month horizon. And I do think that there is scope here for additional upside, considering just how low interest rates are and the quantity of money that is being poured into ETF strategies and pulled out of active money management. That, on the one hand, is representative of the growth of the ETF industry, but there is an additional aspect to it. It's really a growth in terms of the valuation neutral investment business. And that's been a very clear factor in the growth of various industries over the course of the last decade, which has been driven by quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is wonderful for asset prices. It doesn't really matter what the valuations are, they just tend to get pumped up because of the quantity of money hitting the markets. And that has led to the success of the ETF business. Stock market indices alone are, because they're the vast majority at least, are market cap weighted, which means they have a momentum bias. They are always going to favor bigger companies getting bigger. And then with the added impetus of trackers where successively larger amounts of money are hitting the market and supporting a market cap view of investing, then that is, on the one hand, it is helping to drive the momentum move. On the other, it is a further illustration of this valuation neutral way of investing. We also see valuation neutral investing in the private equity sector, where companies are increasingly getting supported by investors because they are trying to gain market share. They're trying to gain critical mass with very little focus on the potential for profits in any sort of manageable time frame. For companies like Uber and Lyft, there is a path to profitability that is somewhere out there in the future, but no one is really willing to give a number to whenever that year is. Then we have the impending IPOs like Airbnb, which at least has active customers and is an internet-based business. But WeWork is a very real estate-heavy business in a real estate bubble, so or at least a real estate environment where the office rates in some of the largest and most prestigious cities in the world are extraordinarily high. Then you have Peloton, which calls itself a tech company, but really it's an exercise bike company, and selling extraordinarily overpriced bikes and also overpriced classes. considering that they're asking for $40 a month to sign up for their exercise classes. Well, you can pay $40 a month and go to the gym in the vast majority of places. 24 Hour Fitness or LA Fitness all have very comparable rates, and that's a real class, not a and certainly doesn't require the outlay of $4,000 to buy a treadmill. These are the kinds of business models that become rational in an environment where yields are continuing to head lower. There's money for everything, and in fact, there's the outlook for negative yields. Putting money into any kind of speculative venture with at least a promise that it will gain market share and profitability sometime is preferable to losing money on certainly losing money. So that's, I think, where we are in terms of the markets. But what it also suggests is that there is a clear relative value play in terms of the equity markets. The S&P 500, for example, yields 1.94%. And that's substantially above the 10-year treasury. The Nasdaq, which is I think synonymously a growth index, is yielding 1%. And that's well above yields that you get, for example, in Europe. When we look at the trend for the Nasdaq, it has been consolidating in the region of that psychological 8,000 level and the previous peaks for most of the last few months, and it is firming within that range. I think it's also worth considering some of the trends for the larger constituents. Amazon, for example, has paused in the region of 2,000, and it is now steadying in the region of the trend mean. Google, which has been ranging now for about 18 months, is firming from the region of its trend mean. Google, which had a very significant drawdown in the middle of 2018, is again firming from the region of its trend mean. And Microsoft, which really sidestepped much of the selling pressure earlier this year, is also consolidating, but is still very much in a medium-term bull market environment. So when we think about the very large cap shares, then they're all at least firming. They're not leading on the downside. There are some that had been considered to have the potential to become truly large cap. And Netflix today was in positive territory, but this is a very inconsistent trend. It looks like a type one top with right-hand extension, or at least a type one acceleration, a type two massive reaction against the prevailing trend with right-hand extension would probably be the more correct way to consider it. And then Tesla, with the release of Porsche's Taycan in here today, now it's got some real competition. Of course, the Taycan is a multiple the price of a Tesla Model S, but it is new and flashy. When we think about Tesla, then they're starting to offer their own insurance, and that has the potential, at least, to be very clearly data-driven. Obviously, with all of the electronics in those cars, they know, and the fact that Teslas are connected to the internet, then they can tell how safe a driver somebody is. And they've said that they're not going to do that yet, but they do have the potential to do that, and that gives them a significant advantage versus other insurance providers. And that should potentially help to support the share, but it is going to have to hold the lows put in June if this is still going to represent support building. What we are starting to see is differentiation. One thing between the winners and the losers. The shares that have done best have been the bond proxies. The shares that are doing worst this year are almost entirely in the retail sector. And that's particularly interesting, I think, because when we look at, for example, Mattel, then they're very exposed to the trade war, and the share has come all the way back to test its lows. Then when we think about Macy's, it's the worst performing share on the index in here this year, and it is also at new reaction lows. It hasn't been this low since 2010. The gap is also one of the worst performing shares in here this year. So the retail apocalypse certainly hasn't stopped, and this is a clear indication that there is continued pressure as a result of technological innovation and also high rents and the fact that a lot of these companies became really very over-leveraged. But then we have the continued performance of the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, and that was also in positive territory in here today. One would assume that this is an index that should be rather influenced by the trade war, and yet it is continuing to do better. The Hang Seng today was up in an impressive manner, resulting from Carrie Lam saying that she was going to cancel the extrajudicial rendition bill. So that was an almost 3% move and confirms near-term support in the region of the 25,000 level. The H share index was also in positive territory. So that is helping to confirm support in the region of the 10,000 level. Of course, the protesters, having seen now the kind of violent manner in which protests can be put down, are much more interested in a democratic outcome and the freedom to elect their own leaders. And that is something that the Beijing government is absolutely never going to submit to. So there is the potential that the Hong Kong situation is not going to get better soon. And it does suggest that we're going, that the likelihood at the moment is that there is going to be a reversion back towards the mean. Then the question is what happens after that. The renminbi was a little firmer in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner, whereas the Japanese yen continues to weaken from the peak put in back in January and the retest of it in August. The Nikkei is another one of these indices which is heavily owned by ETFs, but those ETFs are owned by the government. And I think that's another rather important characteristic that is helping to support the market around this 20,000 level. But it probably does need the catalyst of additional yen weakness and a ramping up of the Bank of Japan's bond purchase program. The bond purchases in Japan have been, in fact, declining since they've moved from outright quantitative easing to just managing the balance or managing the yield curve. When we then think about what's going on in Europe, well, the index was in positive territory in here today. The DAX index, which has been one of the biggest victims of the trade war, is also continuing to bounce from the trend mean. Mid-caps are also bouncing from their respective trend means, so that's rather impressive. What's interesting is that the Russell 2000 in the US has not bounced to any real measurable degree. The weakness in manufacturing in the US is, I think, perhaps weighing on the mid-caps and small-caps. And then when we think about the banking sector, well, it doesn't do especially well with low interest rates, but it should benefit from additional spending and more cash sloshing around. And it is at least steadying from this 300 level. So the inverted yield curve, the inverted swap curve, and the potential for additional interest rate cuts, well, this does suggest that we are in the latter stages of the bull market. It could be anything from 6 to 18 months before we get a recession. It isn't generally until the yield curve, in fact, turns upwards, that we really run into trouble. So we've had the warning shot across the bow. Now it is really up to central banks to really ease and ease aggressively now before growth really starts to turn over, or we really are going to have a recession. And even if they do start easing now, then the potential is that they're going to scare investors. But what we also know is that it is generally immediately after there is an inverted yield curve that stock markets go into their bubble phase. And I think that the logic for a bubble phase beginning at some point over the next 6 or 7 weeks, I think, is the base case at this stage. And that is the reason why gold prices remain really very firm. And gold was at a new recovery high in US dollar terms in here today. And silver advanced another 46 cents. It is cruising towards this psychological $20 area. This has been a phenomenal advance. There's no sign yet that it's over. The first clear downward dynamic will likely signal a peak of at least near-term significance and potentially the beginning of a reversion back down towards the mean. We do know that $20 was an area of resistance all the way back in 2016. And in fact, the move that we had back then was even bigger than the one we've had now, although it took longer. And this rebound that we're getting is certainly helping to stoke interest in the mining sector. The VanEck Vectors Gold Miners ETF is now pushing through the $30 area. This was the peak back in 2016, and it was also a peak in 2013. So there is the potential here that gold miners are in the process of completing their base formation. And platinum was up another $34 in here today. It's now within striking distance of the psychological $1,000 area. And that had been an important area of resistance all the way through from 2017. So if it can sustain a move above that level, well, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment, and we can also start talking about base formation completion there as well. Platinum in particular is really very cheap, and that's particularly true versus palladium. And palladium was also in positive territory in here today, and this does look like a reasonably consistent consolidation over the course of this year, and potentially with a view to breaking on the upside. When we think about the outlook for the wider industrial resources mining sector, then it was in positive territory in here today. The FTSE 350 mining index has been trading below 20,000 without a real sustained move above it since 2012. And there is the potential that if it can sustain a move back above the trend mean, that this will be the occasion when it can push higher. When we think about the continuous commodity index, then it continues to rebound in here. The copper price, having steadied yesterday, was in positive territory again in here today. It is generally in the latter stages of a bull market that you get a rip-roaring move in commodities. Well, it's definitely starting in the precious metals, and I think there is a potential for some of these industrial resources to do better. Shipping rates are also moving higher, and there is likely a dearth of ships as a result of the IMO 2020 regulations coming into effect at the end of this year. So there is the potential that we are in for an inflationary inflection. And I don't think that markets are really prepared for that. And that's particularly true of the bond markets. So I think the kinds of trends that we've seen, for example, in bunds, where there has been one-way action for quite some time. Well, we saw the first evidence in here today of some selling pressure in the bund futures. Now, that might be because of a coupon change. But the reality is that when we think about the trend in the yield, where the 10-year yield is at a negative 67 basis points, this is rather extraordinary. And it is pricing in almost deflation in perpetuity. And that really does suggest that there is a risk that any kind of whiff of inflation will represent really bad news for some very overextended trends in the bond markets. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.